Throughout the ages, history has been altered by word of mouth and the misrepresentation of those who might not have been present when some of the world's most significant events took place. Channelers Barry and Connie Strom bring through the spirits of those who actually witnessed or took part in these historical events and lets them tell their stories in their own words. Welcome to Channeling History. And now, here are your hosts, Barry and Connie Strom.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Channeling History. We're the only show where we speak to the souls that made things happen. I'm Barry Strom, your host. I'll be doing the channeling tonight.
And I'm Connie Strom, your co-host, and I would also like to welcome you to our show. Last week, we spoke to the spirits of four World War II heroes who became famous. They were Charles Bronson, heavyweight boxing champion Joe Louis, Don Adams, and Lee Marvin. This and all of our shows are available on our YouTube channel. It's in the name of Barry Strom, and at this point, we have over 600 videos. We're currently consolidating all of our audio broadcasts on a new platform named podbean.com. Just go to the site and search for Barry Strom.
Now this week we're going to do something entirely different. We're going to channel four Medal of Honor recipients from World War II that you probably never heard of. They're individuals that showed extreme heroism in the Second World War, and we feel that their sacrifices should not be forgotten. We'll describe their acts of bravery from their Medal of Honor citations and then speak with their spirits. If you ever doubted the acts of the greatest generation, you need to listen to this show. Please feel free to submit any comments or questions through the chat room. We'll start with our usual short disclaimer. The opinions or statements voiced on our show are the channeled words of the spirits, do not necessarily reflect our opinions as the Parix Network or of our sponsors. And before we channel, we also say a prayer of protection. So Connie is going to say the prayer, and we're going to begin to channel with these wonderful spirit guests that we have tonight.
God, please grant us your wisdom and protection. Grant us the knowledge that we can handle and keep us safe from all things that will harm us. Keep the messages positive and pure love. Keep us safe from our egos. We ask these things in the light of the seen, the unseen, and the honesty of God. Amen. Let's start tonight's show by describing what it takes to receive the Medal of Honor. The Medal of Honor is the United States Armed Forces' highest military decoration and is awarded to members of the armed forces that have distinguished themselves by acts of valor. The medal is generally awarded by the President of the United States. The requirements for being awarded the medal are so strict that only 472 were awarded during the entire Second World War, of which 266 were awarded posthumously. Over 6.3 million servicemen served during World War II, in a total of which 405,000 were killed and 671,000 wounded. It's also interesting to note that of that total, 39% were volunteers and 61% were drafted.
Now, probably the best known of our four recipients that we're going to do tonight is John Baslione. He was a United States Marine Gunnery Sergeant who received the Medal of Honor for actions during the battle for Henderson Field in the Guadalcanal campaign. He also received the Navy Cross for actions on Iwo Jima later in the war. Sadly, the Navy Cross had to be awarded posthumously for extraordinary heroism during what took place at Iwo Jima. He was the only enlisted Marine to receive both of these decorations in World War II. Baslione, who was then a sergeant, was responsible for commanding two heavy caliber fire sections. These were 30 caliber machine gun groups that had the task of holding a narrow pass at Tanaru River in the Guadalcanal area. A Japanese regiment that numbered 3,000 men began to attack the small crew of Marines as they dug in for the night. The Japanese attacked with grenades and mortar fire. The Marines successfully held off the attack until one crew was disabled by enemy fire. As Basilion's Medal of Honor citation notes, he carried roughly 90 pounds of weaponry and ammunition to the disabled gun pit, running a distance of 200 yards through enemy fire with a total disregard for his own life. As he ran, Basilion killed several Japanese soldiers with his Colt 45 pistol. For a total of 3 days, Basilion ran back and forth between gun pits, supplying ammunition, and assisting the junior Marines. He lost his asbestos gloves, which were gloves especially used to hold or switch the hot barrels of the heavily used machine guns. On deterrent, he used his bare hands to remove the barrel of his machine gun and take out an entire wave of Japanese soldiers during the height of the battle, even though he burned his hands and arms in the process. He was one of only 3 Marines that survived the action. He was awarded the Medal of Honor for what took place at Guadalcanal. He was sent back to the U.S., and he helped raise money for the war effort. He got married, and 3 months later, volunteered to return to combat duty. When he returned to combat duty, he received the next to the highest military award, the Navy Cross. He was serving with the 1st Battalion, 27th Marines, 5th Marine Division. Basilion stormed Red Beach on Iwo Jima on February the 19th, 1945. Leading his gunners up the steep black sand, he and his unit were pinned down by enemy machine gun fire. Basilion started attacking a heavily fortified blockhouse with grenades and demolitions, and single-handedly destroyed a Japanese strong point. He fought his way towards an airfield and assisted a Marine tank trapped in an enemy minefield. He guided the vehicle over deadly terrain to safety, even though he was under intense mortar and artillery barrages. At the edge of the airfield, Basilion was killed by enemy Japanese forces due to mortar shrapnel, and he died at the age of 28. Quite a story. So, John, we're honored to have you with us tonight. Thank you for honoring us. Could not be happier that you could come to us tonight.
Yes, and we're extremely happy that you were born American. Thank you for all you did. What was it like to receive the Medal of Honor?
Well, I missed the ceremony, but I did watch it from this side. I know that my family was pleased when they received the medal. So many of the boys died. I would have traded that medal to get back the lives of many of them that I fought with that day. The medal is a supreme honor. Only a few of us are able to receive the medal. Guadalcanal was a terrible fight. During that battle, we killed a regiment of over 3,000 Japanese. We fought for 3 days. We fought day and night, received almost no sleep, and they just kept picking us off as the battle continued. They would do these bonsai charges. The Japanese were known to almost do these suicide marches. Receiving the honor, the medal is a great honor. But to me, each of the boys that didn't make it would receive it as well.
Is there any special character trait that makes a person perform such acts of bravery as you did?
I don't think so. When you are in a situation such as we were in, where we were fighting truly for our lives, you think of the guys that are next to you and what you have to do to save their lives and get them out of this spot. You really kind of lose contact with reality, with all the savagery that's taking place around you. You're being shot at. Mortars are going off around you. You can hear the bullets whizzing by. And you really don't have much time to think except to react. Marine training prepared us for this, and a lot of what you do under these circumstances is simply reflex.
John, after receiving the medal, you returned to the United States and helped support the war effort. You got married and then volunteered to return to combat. Why did you do that after all you were through?
We weren't finished. My boys were still dying over there, and I wanted to go over and try to save as many of them as I could. It was really that simple.
Will you tell our listeners what it was like during the Battle of Iwo Jima?
Iwo Jima was a real cluster. When we landed on the beach, the enemy had been so well fortified. They were in all of these bunkers. There were tunnels. They had fortified blockhouses. They were totally ready for us. We felt that the bombardment had helped, but they had dug in so well that it had little effect. They had machine guns that were overlapping in their fire and kill range. And the beach was suicide when we first hit it. It was just a one terrible fight.
Why were the Japanese such difficult enemies to fight?
Their culture required that they did not ever surrender, but would fight to the end. To surrender was to bring shame upon themselves and their family. So they would knowingly charge into our guns, realizing what was going to happen.
How were you judged when you returned to heaven?
I was judged very well. They said that, yes, I had taken many lives, but I had done it in order to protect the innocent back at home, that if I had not done what I did, that many more of my friends and that I was fighting with would have died. They pointed out that I had saved many lives. They pointed out that I had acted with true bravery and that I had done the best that I could do. When you fight in the military, you are not penalized for taking lives as long as you do it honorably. We defended ourselves from the Japanese. The Japanese were very, very brutal people, and they were very cruel to the people when they captured the different areas. The Japanese had killed millions of people during their occupation. We were trying to liberate the countries that we were in. They had dug in, and they were ready for a fight. There was no question about that. And they were incredibly brave. They would charge our guns, absolutely knowing that they were going to die. They would try to overwhelm us with numerical superiority, but our training and our weapons were very capable in most instances. The islands of the Pacific, the Marianas, the islands in the Guadalcanal group, they were all well fortified. And it was left to the Marines to try to take these positions. We were trained for it, but it was incredibly difficult. That is why so many of our buddies died in the Pacific trying to recapture those little chunks of islands. So it was an incredible, terrible time, and we just simply reacted as best we could.
How did you think our younger generation would respond if the United States was attacked today?
Things are obviously very different. During the 1940s and 30s, in the 30s we were coming out of this depression and many of the boys joined the military so that they could receive pay and support their families. When the war broke out, everybody volunteered. Pearl Harbor was a terrible, terrible event. And many of my friends volunteered at that time. We knew that we had to do what we could to protect the country. Our generation was very patriotic. I feel that if the country is truly attacked and endangered today, that many will step forward. There are many great individuals, young children, young guys and women that are in the military academies today. They would provide extremely strong leadership, and I am sure that many would volunteer. It may not seem like that because it didn't seem like it in the 30s, but when push comes shove, I think you will find that many are more patriotic than they will admit.
As you watch our country today, do you think your sacrifice was worthwhile?
Absolutely. We had to save the country. We were attacked. The Japanese had killed thousands of us, of our boys at Pearl Harbor. They would have destroyed the country if they were given the chance, and we knew we had to stop them. The Nazis in Europe were the same. They had to be stopped. They were killing millions of innocent people, and I would absolutely do it again without a second thought.
John, thank you so much for joining us this evening. You are a wonderful spirit. Do you have a final message for us?
Yes. I did what I had to do. Most people would do the same thing in my position. When you are fighting among a true brotherhood, such as the Marines, you will do whatever you can to protect the person on your right and on your left. My luck ran out at Iwo, but I succeeded in saving the lives of many of my buddies, and to me, that was the most important thing. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak. I hope that my words may be heard by some individuals that would volunteer to serve our country. So thank you very much. I truly appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you for speaking with us tonight. You are a true American hero and not to be forgotten.
Okay, our next guest is Technical Sergeant Clito L. Rodriguez, U.S. Army. He fought in the Pacific in the battle to retake the Philippines. Sergeant Rodriguez was an automatic rifleman armed with a Browning automatic rifle, the famous BAR, when his unit attacked the strongly defended Paco radio station during the battle for Manila, Philippine Islands. While making a frontal assault across an open field, his platoon was halted 100 yards from the station by intense enemy fire. On his own initiative, he left the platoon, accompanied by a comrade, and continued forward to a house 60 yards from the objective. Although under constant enemy observation, the two men remained in this position for an hour, firing at targets of opportunity, and killing more than 35 hostile soldiers and wounding many more. Moving closer to the station and discovering a group of Japanese replacements attempting to reach the pillboxes, they opened heavy fire with their automatic weapons and killed more than 40 and stopped all subsequent attempts to man the emplacements. Enemy fire became more intense as they advanced to within 20 yards of the station. Then, covered by his companion, Private Rodriguez boldly moved up to the building, threw 5 grenades through the doorway, killing 7 Japanese, destroying a 20-millimeter gun, and wrecking a heavy machine gun. With their ammunition running low, the two men started to return to the American lines, alternately providing covering fire for each other's withdrawal. During this movement, Private Rodriguez's companion was killed. In the 2.5 hours of fierce fighting, the two men killed more than 82 Japanese, completely disorganized their defense, and paved the way for the subsequent overwhelming defeat of the enemy at this strong point. 2 days later, Private Rodriguez again enabled his comrades to advance when he single-handedly killed 6 Japanese and destroyed a well-placed 20-millimeter gun by his outstanding skill with his weapon. Gallant determination to destroy the enemy, and heroic courage in the face of tremendous odds. Sergeant Rodriguez survived the war. He later served in the U.S. Air Force from 1952 to 1954, and then rejoined the Army from 1955 to 1970 during the Vietnam War. Rodriguez passed in 1990. So, Master Sergeant Rodriguez, we thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Indeed. You also have an amazing story. What were your thoughts concerning receiving the Medal of Honor?
I was actually quite surprised they put me up for it. What we had done was simply what had to be done. My boys were pinned down, and they were looking to me for leadership. We attacked. We had the weapons to do it, and we had the training. I did simply what I needed to do to save the lives of those that were with me. You see, when you're under these circumstances, your mind works differently. You really don't comprehend the concept that you are going to be killed. You know what you have to do, and you simply do it. You hope that luck's on your side and that you're not wounded or killed in what you're doing. But you understand that the most important thing are those boys that are with you and that are your responsibility. So the Medal of Honor was a great honor for me. And I thank the military. I had a long career. I loved every minute of it. And it gave me great satisfaction.
Why do individuals such as yourself perform such acts of bravery, putting your life in danger?
You do it to save those that are with you and your responsibility. The young boys look to the sergeant for leadership and guidance. If we fail in our duty, then many of the boys are not going to return. The Marines gave us an incredible training background. They showed us what we needed to do, and they instilled this great belief in us that we were pretty much invincible. The Japanese killed many of us, but we always came out on top in the numbers game. I wish that we had not had to do what we did, but we won, and I saved many lives by doing what I had to do.
And we all thank you for that. When you're on the other side, do you see the souls of those you killed?
You can. Generally, you try to avoid that. But once you're over here, there's no animosities. They understand that it was war. And they would have killed me if they had the opportunity, which they did. They just couldn't pull it off. So you can see those that you fight with. You will see those that you fight with. And if you choose, you can talk with those that you fought against. Many of the souls over here on both sides actually become quite friendly. Keep in mind that when you're here, you're not a Japanese person and you're not an American person. You are simply a soul energy as created by God.
That is correct. You took many lives in the battle. How were you judged for taking those lives?
I also saved many lives, as my friend went before me. I fought, and I did what I had to do. Yes, I took many, many lives, but it was to save those that were around me, to protect those that were under my care, and to take small steps towards winning the war. A war is never won in a single battle. It is won in a multiplicity of battles, and you have to win the majority of the battles to win the war. There were so many boys who were as brave as I was. Sadly, many of them were killed, but many of them lived. And many of them lived because those that were alongside of them fought as bravely as I did.
What was the basis for your obvious love for the military?
When I came back to this side, I found out that I had lived military lives in previous reincarnations. And it was something that my soul actually found necessary in future lives. I wanted to lead individuals. I wanted to help save lives of individuals in battle. And because of that, I choose life plans that usually consist of fighting in wars. It's actually kind of ingrained into my soul history.
What is your opinion of today's military?
The military has changed so much with the weaponry. It is so accurate. The young people are so well trained today. The military academies have grown and have established many leaders. There are also things that I don't like in the military today. I think that there's a general softening. I think that many people are not as tough as they were in my time. We came off the Great Depression and we joined the military. We had suffered through terrible economic times and we knew what it was like in order to have problems in your life. We were attacked. Thousands of our boys were killed at Pearl Harbor. The Nazis were bombing Great Britain and killing thousands of civilians. They were killing millions in the continent of Europe as they were conquering. We had to save the world, and that's what we did.
What changes would you make to today's military?
I would make sure that all members of the military understand just how important each role is. I would make them understand that they need to be patriots. They need to never sell out and give information to the enemy. They need to be ready to truly fight. They need to not pull away from the times that countries that hate you do things to you and may attack you and may kill your boys. They need to be aware that there are many people that hate us in this world, and they need to be prepared to defend our country at all costs.
When you return for another life, will the military be a part of it?
Absolutely. I have no intention of living a life in which the military is not a part of it. I have fought in many wars and many historic events. Protecting those that need protected and protecting your country is, to my soul, one of the most important events that you can ever choose to do. To fight bravely, that is the ultimate thing that I feel that your soul has to be capable of. You have to show patriotism, you have to show love for everyone, but you need to protect your family, you need to protect the citizens of your country, and you need to protect the country itself.
You are one wonderful soul. Do you have a final message for us?
Yes. I was very lucky. I survived, and I continue to serve in the military through multiple events and multiple wars. The United States went through a very difficult period from the 1940s through 1970. They fought World War II, the Korean War, and our boys also died in Vietnam. I tried to save as many of the boys in the military as I could. I tried to use my expertise. I tried to show them how to protect themselves in some of the most difficult conditions. And I tried to show them what it was like to be a true patriot. When you win the Medal of Honor, you are put on a pedestal and you have to serve this incredible example. The Medal of Honor is a sign of the greatest valor that can be shown by a member of the military in the United States. When you wear that medal around your neck, everyone looks up to you that's in the military. You are highly respected, and it is your role to serve as a great example. I did my best. I served many years in the military, and I would do everything again. I just truly regret that I grew old and could no longer do it. So thank you for allowing me to speak as well. It is a great honor.
Thank you, Sergeant Rickert. My mind's going. Anyway, thank you. It's been an honor having you. Up next is Nicholas Menu. Nicholas was a Ukrainian-American and United States career veteran who received the Medal of Honor posthumously. He died fighting the soldiers of Rommel's Africa Corps in 1943. His citation reads, "For distinguishing himself conspicuously by gallantry and intrepidity at the loss of his life above and beyond the call of duty in action with the enemy on 28th of April, 1943 in Tunisia." When the advance of the assault elements of Company A was held up by flanking fire from an enemy machine gun nest, Private Menu voluntarily, alone, and unhesitatingly, with complete disregard of his own welfare, charged the enemy entrenched position with fixed bayonet. Private Menu assaulted the enemy under a withering machine gun and rifle fire, killing approximately 10 enemy machine gunners and riflemen. After completely destroying this position, Private Menu continued forward, routing enemy riflemen from dugout positions until he was fatally wounded. The courage, fearlessness, and aggressiveness displayed by Private Menu in the face of an inevitable death was unquestionably the factor that gave his company the offensive spirit that was necessary for advancing and driving the enemy from the entire sector. So thank you so much for joining us, sir. As you watched from the other side, what did you think when you were awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously?
I was at the ceremony, and I thought that it would give my family final closure. I don't think they truly understood exactly how I had died and what I had done. I don't think they truly understood that when I attacked that position, I had pretty much signed my death warrant. I knew that if that position was allowed to stay, it was firing on the flanks of our unit, and I knew that it would have terrible consequences for the rest of the boys. My friends that have gone before me have talked about the fact that the most important thing to them was that they were saving the lives of their brothers in uniform. That was part of my thinking, but I also knew that somebody had to do this. Those machine guns were well placed, they were taking a toll on our guys, and I felt that with a little bit of luck, I would be able to destroy the emplacements that were carefully dug in and positioned. Rommel's army was a great fighting unit. They knew how to set ambushes. They knew how to fortify their positions. And they knew how to kill. The Africa Corps was renowned. They had defeated the British and they had defeated the Americans initially. I knew that it was going to take special effort, and I felt that I was the only available person that could do it.
So when you were in that battle, what all was going through your mind as you performed these acts of bravery?
When your life is truly in danger, it is something, believe it or not, that you pretty much put out of your mind. You know that if you don't perform, you certainly are going to die. And your training kicks in. You are focused on the soldiers to your right and to your left. You're focused on the enemy. You're thinking about how you can defeat them, how you can kill them. In my instance, I don't think we really had any choices. Those machine guns were going to slowly kill all of us if somebody didn't act. The rest of the guys were trying to take cover. They were trying to fire as best they could, but every time they would lift their heads, they would draw fire. I felt that if I was fast enough, that I would be able to cover the ground and that I would be able to possibly do enough damage that the rest of the guys would be able to follow. Bravery is pretty much of a reflex. You simply do what you have to do to trying to survive. Sometimes you live and sometimes you die. But at least in your mind, you know that you have to die trying.
Before the battle, did you realize you were capable of such acts?
I knew that I could fight. I was well trained. I knew that in the battle, I could control my fear. I felt that I would be protected. Every soldier feels that they're protected. You take a good luck charm, a picture of your family, of your wife, whatever, and you feel that the good luck will protect you. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. In my case, I didn't realize that the backups to the pillbox that I attacked was as strong as it was. And I realized that I had to continue fighting if I was to have any chance.
If you had it to do over again, would you take the same actions, sacrificing your life?
Absolutely. I would try to protect my soldier friends. I would do what I was feel was necessary, and I would absolutely do it again. Perhaps I would maybe do it a little bit differently. Now that I would know when to duck, but I would absolutely repeat my actions on that day.
As you lost your life, how were you greeted in heaven?
As my soul passed from my body, I was looking down at the battlefield and I could see my body was lying there and I realized immediately what had happened. There were several angels there and they said, "You must come with us, that you have done well, but now it is your time to come with us." As I moved towards the light, I saw deceased family members and they greeted me. They said that we're very sorry that you have come to us like that, but we're happy to see you. It was actually a very wonderful event. The fear was gone, the pain was gone, the doubt. It was only that I knew that I was now in heaven and that everything was going to be fine from this time forward.
And how were you judged when you returned to heaven?
I was judged very, very well. No mention was made of the individuals, the German soldiers that I had killed, and I killed quite a few of them. They commented that I had fought bravely and that I had protected my unit, that many of the boys that were with me lived that day because of what I had done. They said that I had been very brave and that I had fulfilled my life plan. I knew that you are judged when you return, but I did not truly understand how it worked. I had never been overly religious, but I always believed. And I had tried to live a good life, and that was all that was important to my guides. I was actually allowed to advance in the level that I was in because of how I lived that life.
As you watch from the other side and see what's going on today, do you still think your sacrifice was worth it?
Absolutely and unequivocally. I know that my actions saved lives of my friends. I knew that my actions gave direction. I knew that my actions allowed the boys to attack without having to face that machine gun fire. I knew that many of my friends were alive that night because of my actions. There is no better feeling on the other side than to have the great satisfaction that you were able to save the lives of your friends. Things are much different on the other side. Once you're here, all the fear of death, the fear of dying, that's all behind you. You know that what you did was a benefit to all of those around you. You know that you've performed admirably. And the fact that I was given the highest honor awarded by the military, as I watched, I felt very good about that on this side.
When you return for another life, will the military be a part of that life for you too?
I don't know. I'm trying to decide what I want to do with my future life. It's approaching time that I return. I feel that I want to help others when I come back, but I'm not totally sure how I want to do that. The world is, at the current time, is in great turmoil. But the time that I lived, the world was in great turmoil as well. I'm not sure what is going to take place in the future. I don't have access to much future information. But I do know that it's inevitable that there will soon be a time that the United States is going to have to defend itself in the future. The United States just simply has too many enemies at this time. There will be a time that they will have to face the inevitable truth, and there will be a time that they are going to have to defend themselves against these countries once more.
Yes, we've heard that before. Sir, do you have a final message for us?
I would like you to allow me to thank you for allowing me to speak tonight. I was very surprised when the guides came to me and asked if I would like to come and tell my story. You see, none of these technologies existed when I lived, so they're kind of a wonder to me. I feel very honored that you selected me to speak tonight. I did my best to serve. I know that I saved the lives of some of my comrades and friends. I know that people returned and raised families because of what I did that day. My actions weren't perfect. I wish that I could have killed more Germans and saved more of the guys. But I also know that many of them returned and raised families. They did not have to die on that field on that day because I guess I died for them. And there's no greater sacrifice in life than to die or to give up your life in honor of saving those that you love. And when you're in the military, you get very close to those that are in your unit. You know that everyone is equal. And you also know that in war, some are not going to survive. Many did, and many didn't. The lives that were lost were terrible. The lives of the Germans, many of them were lost as well, and they lost their country. Today, Germany is a very strong nation and a very strong ally of the United States. Everything has changed in the world today, except the fact that there are still countries that want to destroy the United States. So I hope that the young will pay attention to what's taking place. I know that if you go in the military, you will be trained to not only defend yourself, but defend those around you. If you are forced to fight, many will face the final reward. But I will tell them that it's not as bad as you think it is. When you finally pass into heaven, you will find the rewards of heaven. Live a good life, believe in God, and tell those around you of him. And help those around you to believe in God as well. Because if the worst comes to them in war, they are going to have to face the judgment as well. So thank you for allowing me to speak. I am truly appreciative and honored that you chose me tonight.
Private Mignot, your bravery is an inspiration for us all, and we thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Okay. Edward Carter was one of seven African Americans who had earlier awards upgraded to the Medal of Honor in 1997. They were not awarded Medals of Honor during the war because of the colors of their skin. His bravery was not fully recognized until 34 years after he passed in 1963. He survived the terrible incidents in which he was fighting and lived until 1963. He was given a medal for what he did, but because of the color of his skin in our own military, he was not rewarded as he should have been. As a young man, Carter went to China, where in 1932, he joined the Chinese in their fight against the recent Japanese invasion. You see, the United States did not join World War II until they were attacked in Pearl Harbor. But the Japanese had been busy for 10 years conquering other countries. He fought with the Chinese, and then when the fascists attempted to take over in Spain, he went to Spain and he fought the fascists as part of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. There were other Americans that had volunteered to fight for Spain's safety as well. When he joined the army, because he was black, he was relegated to a service and supply position. It was not until the horrific losses of the Battle of the Bulge that he was one of 4,000 black volunteers that were selected for a combat role. Near the city of Speyer, France, or Speyer, Germany, the tank upon which Staff Sergeant Carter was riding received bazooka and small arms fire from the vicinity of a large warehouse to its left front. Staff Sergeant Carter and his squad took cover behind an intervening road bank. Staff Sergeant Carter volunteered to lead a three-man patrol to the warehouse where other unit members noticed the original bazooka fire. From here, they were to ascertain the location and strength of the opposing German positions and advance approximately 150 yards across an open field. Enemy small arms fire covered this field. As the sergeant's patrol left their covered position, they received intense enemy small arm fire, killing one member of the patrol instantly. This caused Sergeant Carter to order the other two members of the patrol to return to the covered position and cover him with rifle fire while he proceeded alone to carry out the mission. The enemy fire killed one of the two soldiers while they were returning to the cover and seriously wounded the third before he also reached the covered position. An enemy machine gun burst wounded Staff Sergeant Carter three times in the left arm as he continued to advance. He continued and received another wound in his left leg that knocked him from his feet. As Staff Sergeant Carter took wound tablets and drank from his canteen, the enemy shot the canteen from his left hand with a bullet going through his left hand. Disregarding all of these wounds, Sergeant Carter continued the advance by crawling until he was within 30 yards of his objective. The enemy fire became so heavy that Sergeant Carter took cover behind a bank and remained there for approximately 2 hours. Eight German riflemen approached Staff Sergeant Carter, apparently trying to take him prisoner. The sergeant killed six of the enemy soldiers and captured the remaining two. These two enemy soldiers later gave valuable information concerning the number and disposition of enemy troops. Staff Sergeant Carter refused evacuation until he had given full information about what he had observed and learned from the captured enemy soldiers. Sergeant Carter, thank you for joining us tonight.
Yes, thank you. We really appreciate you. What did you think when you were not awarded the Medal of Honor after the battle, after all you went through?
I didn't expect it. I knew that blacks had not been given the Medal of Honor as yet. I was given a Bronze Star for all that I did, and I was satisfied with it. I didn't do what I did for a medal. I did what I did so that the soldiers that were under my command and protection were not killed by the Germans. You don't fight for medals. You fight to save your friends.
You are wonderful. Will you please tell us what it was like during the battle and what was going through your mind?
The field upon which we were to cross was relatively quiet because everyone was in cover. As soon as I and the three other soldiers began to cross the field, small arms fire erupted. They had hidden machine guns, and the soldiers were firing at us with their rifles. One of my boys was instantly killed. Another one was hit as I was trying to get him back to cover. And the third was also hit before he could get to cover. I knew that there was only one way that we were going to succeed on that day. And that was if I could continue across the field and wipe out the enemy position. All of a sudden, I took a hit. I had three rounds go through my arm. I tried to continue and took a round in my leg and it knocked me off my feet. I found temporary cover. In those days, they gave you painkillers if you were hit that you could take. I took some painkillers because I knew my day was not over yet, that I could still fight, and that I was in an advanced position and was the only one that could take advantage of trying to wipe the Germans out at that time. I took a drink from my canteen, and damn if they didn't shoot the canteen and the bullet went through my left hand. At this point, I was bleeding from five different places. I tried to put a tourniquet on the leg wounds, and I waited. I would periodically fire, and the Germans, I think, tried to take me prisoner. I managed to kill six of the eight. And the other two threw up their hands, and I managed to capture them. By this time, the boys were putting protective fire into the area, and they came after me. We interrogated the Germans and got a lot of information. When I knew that everybody was as safe as they could be, I allowed myself to be evacuated.
What was it like for a black soldier during World War II?
It was difficult. We knew that we could fight, but the white boys did not think so. It was not until we were put into battle that we proved just how effective we could be as fighting units. Segregation was very real in the United States Army during World War II, and it was very disheartening for those of us who simply wanted to go into combat and to prove our worth and to help save our country.
How were you personally affected by racism in the Army during the war?
Instead of being put into a combat unit, I was put into other units that would not see action. It was not until the Bulge that they finally needed men, and I guess they finally accepted the fact that the blacks, officers and men, were ready to fight.
As you watch from the other side, what is your opinion concerning racism in the Army today?
It still exists, but in a very minor manner. Today we have black generals. Today we have blacks that are truly accepted. The military academies have great equality in who they take. So it is far better than what we saw in my time.
What medal were you awarded after the battle?
I was given a Bronze Star with oak leaf clusters. It is a very honorable medal. I knew that I would not be given anything much greater than that.
Why do you think you were awarded only the Bronze Star after all that heroic action?
Because I was a black man. It's very simple.
It's a shame. 34 years after you passed, you were posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor. What did you think as you watched from the other side?
My family was very honored by it. I guess it's better late than never. I really never thought that they would give a black man the medal, but they did. It only took them 50-some years to realize it.
Sir, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
Yes. I want to stress the fact that when you're on this side, there's a great equality. There's no black, there is no white. I truly hope that the time comes that in our military, there is no black, there is no white, there is no color barrier. Today, blacks have a great opportunity in the military. I wish that many of the poor blacks in the inner cities would take advantage of it. They would be able to earn a living, be trained. They would be able to protect the country. They would be taught what to do, and they would be taught how to act when they get out of the military. Today, things are much different. Thank God for that. I did the best I could under the circumstances. I fought as heroically as I could, and I saved as many of the boys as I could, and I never looked to see if they were white or black that I was saving. We were still in segregated units, but we did earn the respect of the white men in uniform as well. So thank you for allowing me to come through tonight. I consider it a great honor, and I especially consider it a great honor that you would choose a black soldier to speak on your show tonight.
Thank you, Sergeant Corner. Your sacrifice and bravery is an inspiration for all, and Barry and I are well aware of the fact that skin color has nothing to do with a person's quality. Okay. Next week, we're going to continue with this series and bring you four more Medal of Honor recipients. We think it's very important that these heroes are not forgotten.
Indeed. Connie and I started a new podcast. It's called Hello Heaven. You can hear it on Fridays at 6 p.m. Pacific time. Audio is available on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Alexa, and most of the other platforms.
I'd like to thank you all for joining us tonight on Channeling History. This week, we brought to the story of four amazing individuals that showed extreme bravery during World War II. Hopefully, their actions will not be forgotten. We always try to bring you the truth about history by speaking to those souls that lived the events. It's only by understanding the events of the past that we can prepare properly for the future. Hopefully, our younger generation will take time to learn about the huge sacrifices that the individuals have made through the years to protect our freedoms and our way of life.
Okay, thank you so much for listening. Don't miss next week. We are going to have four more of these incredibly brave individuals. So goodbye. Please join us Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Para-X Radio Network.